Everyone, welcome to The Final Four is Not on the Schedule. I'm your host, Eric, alongside with expert analyst, Rod. Thanks for joining us on the best MSU basketball podcast featuring an in-depth recruiting, game matchup, and post-game analysis. We dive deep to give you the best tools to enjoy the Spartans and impress your friends and family. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to talk about Michigan State's 89-68 victory over the Buffalo Bulls from the MAC. At the Breslin Center. Before we start, I just wanted to remind you that the t-shirts are in production, and those of you who ordered them will be getting them soonish. We expect to have them to ship out next week.
We're hoping shipping next week. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So maybe end of next week or the beginning of the following week. Kind of depends where you live.
Depending upon where you are. Yeah. And how quickly you can get these things turned around. But yeah, we're anticipating getting them from the printer next Tuesday. So shipping will, don't think that we have a real mail room operating. It will be me mailing these things out. So it may take a couple of days. We have a fair amount of orders to go through, actually. So, but you should be seeing them shortly is the bottom line.
It may be entirely dependent on Rod's patience at the post office and how long he's willing to wait in line.
That's true.
Also, you know, if you want to support the show, obviously we'll have another batch of t-shirts going out. We'll have to decide when, maybe in a month and a half or something like that. But we'll do that again. If you want to support the show, we really appreciate it. There are plenty of opportunities from a monthly standpoint through Patreon. You can find those links at thefinalfoursonthescheduledotcom/support. You can also make one-time donations via PayPal or Venmo. All right, so let's talk about the Buffalo Bulls. The most notable headline that came out of this is welcome back, Malik Hall. Malik came back. He played not a whole lot. He played 13 minutes, but they were significant minutes. He scored 11 points, didn't have any rebounds, but you could definitely see a difference in the team's demeanor. And he was 2 of 2 from three. He looked good. He didn't look that rusty, and certainly not as rusty as maybe I felt like Jaden Akins did when he came back, at least just from a conditioning standpoint. I mean, he didn't play as many minutes, I suppose, as Jaden did his first time back, where I think Jaden played 20, but that was definitely notable. A.J. Hogard with a double-double with 11 points, 10 assists, only 2 turnovers. And I think, you know, the other guy, and also Joey Hauser with a double-double with 12 rebounds, 14 points. And Sissoko almost had 10 rebounds. He came down with 9. A game that was pretty shaky for the first about 8 minutes or so, maybe even 9. Michigan State couldn't hit anything, and then they started hitting a lot of shots. And I think, you know, it was an opportunity for Buffalo that they just did not seize early in the game. I think they had a lot of decent looks, or at least opportunities to score, and they just weren't able to hit the bunnies. And the inability to put pressure on Michigan State was kind of lost in those first segment or 2 segments of the game. And then it was really, they were playing uphill the rest of the game. They had a little run to end the first half and start the second half, and that was pretty much it. And they ran in fumes from then on out.
Yeah. I thought that Michigan State struggled a little bit offensively at the beginning of each half, but then when they got dialed in, things looked pretty good. Maybe not an accident that Malik Hall, his time on the floor kind of coincided with them getting on track in both halves, actually.
Yeah.
Defensively, though, I actually thought MSU was pretty good, save for that beginning segment of the second half. That's where Malik Hall was most impressive with me. I mean, I thought his footwork, which is what you worry about coming off the injury he had, was evident at both ends. I mean, I thought he moved confidently. He was moving well. All that was great. But, man, it was so obvious to see what a difference he makes defensively.
Yeah,
agreed. So obvious. And I thought, as I say, I thought Michigan State was pretty good as a team defensively through a lot of this game. But, boy, that opening few minutes of the second half, not good. I actually thought Buffalo, a lot of the shots they hit, I thought were well guarded. I saw Tom Izzo at the end of the game saying he thought the defense was inconsistent. I'm not going to be surprised if after they get a chance to look at the tape that he feels a little better about it than he did, because other than, you know, coming right off the floor, because a lot of the shots Buffalo hit were garbage shots. They really were. I mean, there were a lot of well-guarded shots that Buffalo hit in this game. You know, you look at the numbers and they're okay. By the numbers, MSU defensively doesn't look spectacular. They look okay. Buffalo shot 42% from the floor, which is higher than you'd want. Only 31% from three, although that's slightly better than they got on the season. But as I say, I really felt MSU defended a little bit better than that number suggests. That was my impression. I mean, you know, reasonable minds can differ, but and I give Malik Hall. I thought Jaden Akins looked the best he's looked defensively. I think he was really active. I liked Trey Holloman again defensively. I thought Mati Sissoko was great in pick and roll. I thought that was the most consistent performance he's had as a pick and roll defender in weeks. So there were a lot. I thought Joey Hauser played pretty well defensively. The guys who struggled are the guys you'd expect to struggle. Pierre Brooks.
Yep.
Jackson Kohler at times. You know, and they got taken advantage of. But there were a lot of things I liked on the defensive end. Going back to Malik, just so great to see him back out there and to look as if he's didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, I was surprised.
He looked exactly like you take him from where he was that Villanova game and drop him into this one. And it was the same kind of play. The only difference was he didn't see the minutes, but you know, that was to be expected. As I would talk about 15 to 20, he ended up getting 13, you know, didn't play a lot in the second half. I'm not sure if there was something that was maybe precautionary, you know, he was sitting working with that massaging piece of equipment they had for most of the time he was on the bench in the second half, but he certainly didn't look like he was in any pain or suffering any discomfort or stress. I would assume they were just being very careful with it, but you know, you're back into the Big Ten now. So pretty quickly, they're going to be looking to ramp him up. And I thought it was a great first step from him. He just makes the whole thing better offensively and defensively. I think you really saw the difference that he can make. I think his presence offensively, when he's back in the role I think we anticipate he'll be in, you're probably not going to see Michigan State go through as many of those lull periods as we've seen since he's been out. And even tonight, you know, we mentioned the beginnings of each of the halves tonight were not good. Well, what do those have in common with each other? No Malik Hall on the floor. I think he's so effective with his patience and his footwork that if you're struggling to get something, he's a guy you can get on the blocks and let him kind of work his way into position to score, you know, and that's really what you want when you're struggling offensively. You really want to have that guy who can get near the rim and you can rely on to just go get you a bucket to break some bad momentum. And MSU really, you know, AJ Hogard has probably been their best option for that up until now. But Malik is going to give them that kind of guy again. And that's a big, big positive. And then, as we said, defensively, man, I think him and with Jaden Akins rounding back into form, this has the potential to be a very good defensive team in the Big Ten. I really believe that.
There was that possession where both he and Akins were out at the key, just switching back and forth off the ball handlers, and those guys couldn't get anything going. I mean, they were totally flummoxed out there.
Dane Fife pointed it out on the broadcast, you know, that with Malik, you could truly switch one through four, and I would argue Mati can guard a guard at least for a little bit. I think you can go one through five, and I don't know that they always felt comfortable with Malik out of the lineup that they could do that, at least not do it, you know, at a high level. You might try to do it, but, you know, if you've got Pierre Brooks out there switching, that's a different story than if it's Malik. So very, very impressive stuff from him. And I think it's clearly going to make a big difference for this team. You could see it in the minutes he played.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, comparing, I think Joey and Malik have similar, I guess, effects on the team in the sense that They're both steady forces. And I think Joey is just kind of a steady presence, but Malik is like a calming presence. Like, I think he really just, as you mentioned, with the offense just runs better. They just seem less confused and defensively, he just makes little move. Like, you watch him, he'll just recover and help for a second, go back. He just knows kind of what he's doing out there. It makes a huge difference. It's amazing.
What did Mike Garland tell us when we had him on the podcast after the Penn State game? Exactly the kind of things we saw tonight, that when you have a guy like Malik out there who understands not just his role, but everybody else's, and can be vocal, can call things out, that's not just going to be about him covering his man at a higher level than somebody else who'd be playing those minutes would. There's a knock-on effect. What he can do in terms of their gap principles, you know, and you saw that if you're watching closely, you'll see it where he might just take a step to shrink the gap, so to speak, you know? So a guy doesn't have a driving lane, whereas with somebody else out there, they might. And it's subtle stuff, but man, it's so important. And it's the kind of thing that ability to cover up maybe for somebody else's mistake, and allow the whole, all five guys to be connected. That's a big, big, big deal for any team, definitely for Michigan State with the way they defend. And I think it's just with him out there, just the whole is going to get a lot better. And again, I don't want to discount the value as well of Jaden Akins getting back to being the guy he can be, which I think we saw again tonight. I know he scored and he shot the ball well, but I was really impressed with him defensively in a lot of this game. I thought he was, I thought he was pretty good at times. And that's another thing that's going to help them elevate.
And I would also add that Kohler, although he definitely struggled defensively and a number of times, especially in the pick and roll, offensively, he started looking a little comfortable for the first time. I feel like this season he had his first shot wasn't very good. And then he sort of got into, he looked like he was getting into his spot and into moves and places that he wanted to be in, and started converting on those a little bit. And he also had that nice tip off the missed free throw too.
Yeah. He had the one make on a post up that he hit the dream shake move, kind of a fadeaway. And that's nice. And that's something he's got in his bag that I don't think there's a lot defenders can do about that. You know, that's the beauty of that move, is that there's really not a lot a defender can do to contest it really, really well. You know, you just kind of have to hope that he misses the shot. Look, he's still got to get, it's probably at this point, I think it's a combination of confidence and some strength issues. I think Dane Fife mentioned that on one of the shots that he missed around the rim, that, you know, he said he's just not quite strong enough yet to do what ideally he would do in that scenario and just go up straight and power through it. But he'll get there. He just may not get there this season. I think it was a good game for a lot of guys, but especially guys like, you know, Malik, obviously just coming back off the injury, you wanted to see play well. But then I thought Jackson Kohler had some positive things happen, and I really liked Trey Holloman tonight.
Yeah.
I thought that was, you want to talk about a guy kind of finding himself offensively and just in terms of confidence. And look, he only had 7 points. He was only 1 for 3 from the floor, 1 for 2 from three, and he was 4 for 4 at the line. But he was the most aggressive and the most confident in terms of looking for his own offense as I can recall seeing him maybe yet this year. And that's a really good sign, because again, you're going to need him. It gets real coming up in a few days. And you need these guys. Michigan State basketball is a program that relies upon depth. You know, Tom Izzo wants to play guys off the bench. He doesn't want to go with an iron six or something like that. And so if that's going to be the case, well, your Trey Hollimans, your Jackson Kohlers, those guys have got to be capable of contributing. And we know Trey can do that defensively. There's no question about that. We know that he can do it as a point guard, you know, as a guy who handles the ball, runs the offense. But to see him be assertive in looking for his own shot, his own opportunities to score, taking the ball hard to the rim and getting fouled, that's a big deal. That's the element that hasn't been there. And frankly, if he doesn't do that, it makes him a little easier to guard if opponents don't feel sure. like they have to respect him. Well, now you got a game against a decent opponent, not a great one, but a decent one that he put it on tape, you know? So people mm-hmm. are going to have to think about that, whether they want to play him honestly or not. I also, the no-look pass he had in transition to yeah, White's, I believe, was, you remember, I think, I'm pretty sure we talked about this on a podcast that maybe it was a Jack Ebling show. I can't remember. But somewhere I was talking about how we haven't even started to scratch the surface of what Trey Holloman is capable of doing as a playmaker.
Yeah.
That he is a guy who can make spectacular plays. If you saw clips of him in high school, you probably have a sense of what I'm talking about. That play might be the first time this year that we've seen it, but wow, was it impressive.
Yeah.
And then he gave the bench and the crowd the goggles look for emphasis. But really nice night from him. I was really happy with that because they're going to need him. They're flat out. They're going to need him to be a guy that they can at least turn to and say, hey, we need 10 minutes, 12 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. And to know that he's feeling that way, feeling that confidence and playing at this level, that's a big deal.
And I think, you know, to your point about him getting, getting his shot and going and looking for it, at least at the rim, that was a lot of players tonight. And, you know,
there were 30 free throws
for Michigan State, which was a season high. I think a season high.
Yeah, it is.
But more importantly, it wasn't like a foul fest where they're just, you know, blowing the whistle on just dumb reach-ins. They were attacking. It was either you foul them or it's a two, you know, it's a layup. And so it was them being smart, cutting well to the basket and stuff. And so I think, you know, they did get 30 free throws, but it was because they earned those. It wasn't like, you know, and it wasn't like them just looking for contact. Like I felt like how Maryland play, you know, dives to the rim. It was actually just going to hard to score. And they were, you had no choice as a defender, either foul them or let them score.
100% agree. It was one of the more aggressive games I can recall Michigan State playing in that way in a long time. And you said it was kind of across the board. It wasn't just where, and honestly, I don't even think they got the benefit of everything they should have. I thought Buffalo was just abusing Tyson Walker. And it brings something up. I don't know if I've ever even said this, but it's on a podcast, but it's something I do think about. I think Tyson Walker gets the least amount of respect from officials of anybody I can think of at a similar level of play in this conference. He gets absolutely hammered around the basket and seemingly very rarely gets the benefit of the whistle. And I'm not quite sure why that is, but he was attacking. He just wasn't getting rewarded for it. But you mentioned Holloman shot 4 free throws. Pierre Brooks got 4. Malik had 4. And I'm talking about attempts here. Tyson had 4. He should have had more than that. Hogard had 4. Hauser had 4. And almost all of that was the result of guys, as you said, attacking. It wasn't just weird touch foul calls when they're in the penalty 25 feet from the basket. It was a result of guys actively trying to make plays. And it was a lot of different guys doing it. It wasn't one guy or two guys. So that's, look, if they can even come close to sustaining that, that's a big deal, because MSU actually didn't shoot free throws all that well tonight. They weren't horrible, but 21 for 30, 70%, they're a little better than that as a team. Yeah. So if they can get to the line even 20 times, 20 free throw attempts a night, I'd grab that in a heartbeat. They came into this game averaging 14, which is a very low number. And it's people have to understand, Michigan State under Tom Izzo historically is not a team that tends to shoot a lot of free throws, relative to, you know, the national average. And it's because offensively, they've often been a team that shoots a lot of jumpers, definitely has not placed a premium historically on what we were just talking about, you know, the fullback dive offense. So they don't tend to shoot a lot of free throws. But this year, it's been low even by MSU standards. So it was really good to see them play this way, because I think they've got guys who are capable of doing it. That's the thing. When you look at Jaden Akins, you look at A.J. Hogard, you look at Tyson Walker, now you look at Holloman. You know, even Pierre Brooks showed that tonight on a couple of occasions. Malik Hall can do it. They've got a lot of guys who you should feel, in my opinion at least, you should feel comfortable with in terms of those guys looking to take people to the rim. And that should be getting you to the line a fair amount. And so it was great to see.
Yeah, and I think also along those same lines a little bit is Hogard posting up at least three times that I recall. And, you know, Dame Fife mentioned that as well. But that looked like, I mean, that was an intention. That was a play called by the bench.
Absolutely.
Right? And so that's obviously going to be something you're going to use.
Yeah, and here's why it's a big deal. First of all, you know that A.J. Hogard can score down there. Most of the time, he's going to have a physical advantage against the guy who's guarding him. Maybe not actually in the next game, shockingly, because Nebraska's got a point guard who's bigger than he is. But most of the time in this league, I mean, I think about that game coming up against Michigan. I tend to think they'll probably put Doug McDaniel on Tyson Walker, but there will be times where Doug McDaniel has to guard A.J. Hogard. That's not a good physical matchup for Michigan. So A.J. is going to have the advantage physically a lot of the time. But more than that, he's actually got a post game. It's not like, well, he's just a bigger body, so we're going to stick him down there and hope good things happen. He knows what he's doing. We've seen it. He's got touch around the rim. I think he's got decent footwork in the post. He's got all those elements. But the other thing you like is if defenses get worried about that and feel like they need to send help, well, you've got one of the best passers in the country.
Yeah.
Trying to pass out of a double team. I like your odds. And I mentioned this on the Spartan Mag board actually during the game. The thing that you like about it from a Michigan State perspective, I would think, is that, and not every team fits this mold, but MSU does. MSU has personnel that they can play an inverted game maybe a little better than some other teams, because let's just say you're doing that when you happen to be playing Joey Hauser and Malik Hall together, which they'll do at times this year. Not a lot, but they'll do it. That would be a lineup where all four of the other guys around AJ are shooting threats. At a minimum, you're going to have three. So you can really do it. You're not losing anything, you know? You've got Hogard's physical advantage on the block, and then you've got big guys feeding the post potentially who could spot up around the arc and give you a shooting threat if the defense does bring help.
I thought it was real interesting too when they were attacking the zone that one time that AJ was playing on the at the free throw line.
Yep.
And which you can afford to do at Michigan State because you've got Walker and I don't know if Holloman's in the court or if it's Akins. Yep. You've got other ball handlers out there, and to your point, you've got Hauser can hit outside, and having Hogard there with the ability to pass anywhere, I mean, that's deadly.
And you feel, you know, and honestly, they've used a few, they haven't seen a ton of zone this year. When they have seen it, they've used different guys. And I think they've actually got a lot of candidates who can fill that role. I think Malik can do it. Mm-hmm. I think Joey could do it. But the thing about Hogard is I do feel comfortable with him taking a 12 to 15 footer if it's open. Cause you need a guy who's a true threat in that middle role. You know, you need a guy who, if a defense doesn't collapse on him when he gets the ball, can just stick that shot. And I think he's proven he's capable of making that shot.
He's also capable of taking two dribbles, forcing them to respond and that then too. Picking out real quick. Cause he's, you know, he sees everything on that's going on the floor.
That too. Absolutely. You
know, to have your point guard be able to feel that role is kind of deadly in many ways.
Yep.
So the only other thing we sort of briefly touched on, I don't know if it was this episode or the one before, but you know, this tendency for either AJ or Tyson to get two fouls in the first half early and sort of limit the team. And, you know, now a depth is not as much an issue, I suppose, with Malik back, but you know, Walker picked up those two fouls. He had two turnovers, but I think they were both those offensive fouls.
They were.
So kind of weird. They're just kind of dumb fouls. I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's always one of them. It's a bad habit that hopefully they
Of. Tyson lately, and they can't look. I talked about how important it is that Trey Holloman is confident and proves capable of helping them when he's on the floor. And that's true. And certainly Jaden Akins rounding into form as the high level player we think he can be. That's also important. But the fact is Michigan State needs Tyson Walker. They just do. They can't. It's going to be very tough in Big Ten games if he's got to sit for, you know, 13 minutes in the first half. You know, that's just, and Hogard too, but it's been more frequently Tyson of late. They just can't have it. And as you said, both fouls were offensive. Those are the ones that just, they drive you crazy. You know, it's one thing if it's a defensive foul where you get forced into it and, you know, it's just, you got to tip your cap to the other guy for kind of creating it. But I didn't think either of those fouls were plays where you tip your hat to the Buffalo defender. They were just bad decisions.
Yeah.
And he's too important. You know, if Dane Fife compared him to Kalen Lucas, I get the comparison in some ways. One difference is it's taken Tyson a while to develop the mindset that Kalen Lucas had basically from the moment he arrived on campus, which is he was going to attack people. He's not the player that Kalen was, but he is really important to this team. It's a bad habit that he's got to break because they can't afford it. He means too much at both ends, honestly.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I think it affects his offense too, a little bit when he gets into trouble. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I mean, but naturally. Sure. So why don't we'll go through the keys of the game. So we'll take a quick little break and come right back and do the keys of the game. So the first key is health. And, you know, the question, of course, is Malik Hall. He came back. He looked, like you said earlier, he looked like he had never left. And, you know, I think if you needed to, I imagine you could start him at Michigan. But I don't think they'll need to. And I think Izzo is going to probably delay the decision that he has to make at some point to sit one of his six best players. And, you know, at least from a starting role. And I think we're probably thinking it's going to be Walker, right?
I do not feel confident in making that assessment. And Izzo mentioned it this week in one of his press conferences before this game. He said he was kind of giving the media a hard time, the beat guys. And he said, yeah, I can't, it's going to be like Christmas for you guys. I'm going to have, you know, people screaming about, you know, why isn't this guy starting? Why isn't that guy starting? And he said, it's a problem, but you know, it's kind of a good problem to have, but it is a problem for him to figure out what that group should look like. And I don't know that there's a clear answer yet. You know, I could see an argument for Tyson Walker, but then I can also see an argument for wanting him on the floor because of the advantages that 2-point guard look gives them. You know, are you going to turn Jaden Akins back into a sixth man role the way he was at the start of the season, acknowledging that if he hadn't been hurt, he probably wouldn't have been in that role to begin with. He probably would have been a starter. And he just seems just now to finally be finding himself again. I mean, this was the second straight really good game from him. And I think in some ways it was a better overall game than the Oakland game. When you take into account the defensive end. So what do you do? I know this much. Whatever Malik is doing in terms of starting or not starting, I expect that the Nebraska game, we will see him on the court earlier than we did in this one.
Yes.
I think he'll be the first guy in. And I think we'll see his minutes increase. And then by the Michigan game, yeah, I expect another increase as long as there's, you know, there's no backward movement in terms of his physical condition. Sure. But yeah, it was, it would look, it was as good as you could have hoped for, really. in terms of this health aspect. Malik looked really good and didn't look like anybody else got banged up. So that's a great sign.
Yeah. So the second key to the game was transition. Buffalo likes to play fast, just like Michigan State. Kind of a very similar, and I think Fife talked about during the broadcast that they have a very similar approach to attacking after after made baskets or just to try and get moving after a rebound. So, you know, using our favorite statistic, fast break points, the Michigan State site accredits Buffalo with 6, Michigan State with 16. I think that's actually pretty accurate. Michigan State's transition was pretty good at times. And got a lot of open looks and things going in, at least if not in the transition, at least in secondary transition. And I don't think the other thing I'd say, they limited Buffalo pretty well.
Yes, there was, and that's been something that this team has been a little spotty at times. There have been just enough moments where opponents have gotten easy baskets, and you're just not used to seeing that from Michigan State. But that didn't really happen tonight, and. I'm not ready to say all the transition game is fixed, but, you know, Mahdi got a rim run basket, a dunk, which was really nice to see because that hasn't happened a lot. And I know he's got the physical tools. He's a great athlete.
Yeah, right.
You know, so nice to see him get loose on that. And as you say, they had enough on the break or the secondary break that it felt like a continuation of maybe the small signs of improvement we saw in the Oakland game. And defensively, they were much better in terms of defending Buffalo's transition.
Well, the next stat is paint offense. And this is where the stats are misleading. Michigan State with 38 points of paint and Buffalo 44. But you have to attribute 90% of those free throw attempts to being inside the paint. I mean,
yeah.
Well, maybe 100%. I mean, they're
for
all,
sure.
Almost all, right? So, they got their credit 38. They probably had equivalent of almost 60 points in the paint.
Yeah, you make a really good point. Look, they didn't take a ton of threes. I mean, they were, what were they? Eight for 19.
Yeah.
So out of 59 shots, 40 came from inside the arc. That's a pretty high percentage. That's essentially 2/3 of your shots were coming from two. And that doesn't measure the activity around the rim that got them to the line, as you say. So Michigan State very clearly was looking to get more done inside, and I think they were largely successful at it. It wasn't people, and I saw it tonight, people screaming about the first two or three possessions where they're clearly trying to go to Mahdi. Okay, I understand. It doesn't always look pretty, but there's a method to that madness in terms of what MSU is trying to establish in their players. They want those guys to have getting the ball to the rim as a mindset. And I think it was improvement. I mean, they're still not a team that I think finishes around the basket as well as you'd like. You know, there were a lot of shots that got blocked. Some that, as I mentioned, Tyson Walker should have gotten a couple foul calls that weren't made. But even considering that, they're not quite as efficient finishing as you would like to see. But overall, I can't really complain about this area very much because I think it did demonstrate some improvement, primarily because of what we've been talking about for a lot of this podcast, that they were so aggressive that they forced Buffalo to foul them a lot.
So the fourth key to the game are turnovers. You know, it's been a little bit of a problem recently. I think, yeah, there are 10 turnovers tonight. One or two, maybe even two of them in the last 2 minutes with basically backups on the floor. So really good. I think they had 4 turnovers in the first half.
Yep.
Buffalo had, felt like they had more. They only credited 14, but they definitely had a lot more sort of sloppy turnovers. I thought, you know, they protected the ball well. As I mentioned before, A.J. Hogarth, 10 assists, 2 turnovers. Joey Hauser had 6 assists and 1 turnover.
Good
effort by everybody, I think.
Yeah, it was, you know, after the Oakland game, which, you know, is looking as if it truly is an outlier, they got back on the beam. I mean, in a game that was relatively fast-paced, let's put it this way, most Big Ten games are not going to be played at that pace.
Right.
They just Big Ten teams just aren't going to do that. So given that it was a faster paced game, I think 10 turnovers, you can live with that number for sure. You know, that was getting back into the realm they want to be in. And, you know, as we said, MSU had what? I'm going to say minimum three offensive fouls. Because Walker yes. had two.
Mahdi had at least one.
Mahdi had one. And I don't even know Kohler for some reason. I think he might have been called for one. But in any event, a good percentage, at least 30% of those turnovers were the result of offensive fouls. So yeah. It maybe was even better than we think.
And they also had six steals. So, you know, six of the 14 turnovers were Buffalo were steals from.
Well, Michigan that's State, where so. I mentioned Jaden Akins. I don't know how many steals Jaden got credited with.
He got credited one. He almost had that second one, and then it sort of the ball sort of got away from him, and he ended up fouling to try and get that recover that ball.
But I even considering he also had a block on a jump shooter too. But even considering that he only had one, I thought he was good all the way around defensively. But I thought he was more active than we've seen him since he's come back, and that's a good sign too because. I think that's something that can help this Michigan State team certainly is a Jaden Akins that and MSU has other guys. Tyson Walker's this way too. They've got guys that can force a turnover against you without gambling.
Yeah.
You know, normally your high steals guys, if you look at it, oftentimes they tend to be guys who take a lot of risks. Tyson Walker and Jaden Akins don't tend to take risks. They've got good active hands, and that's what gets them those turnovers. And I thought Jaden was really creating a lot of havoc with the way he was playing tonight. Good sign.
And the final key to the game was offensive rebounding.
Yeah.
Buffalo is not a good defensive rebounding team. It's certainly a bad offensive rebounding team. Yeah, they're what, 275 defensive rebounding. So Michigan State was a 27.6% offensive rebounding percentage, which is not very good. Buffalo was 26%, so at least Michigan State defensive rebounded okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, you know, bad effort, I guess, on the offensive boards, and that may be the biggest criticism you can have coming out of this game.
Yeah, and
it's just who they are, probably, right?
Yeah, I think we just have to accept that. At this point, I mean, you know, we talked about it again with Mike Garland right before they went into this period of, you know, 3 weeks where they only had three games. And, you know, he was convinced on, oh, that's something they're going to work on. And I don't see a lot of signs that this team is going to emerge as a better offensive rebounding group. I just do not see it. I think we're going to need to see – you know, different personnel for that to happen. They just aren't, you know, we'll see next year, you know, Cohen Carr flying around, Xavier Booker able to do, you know, who knows. But for now, this group, I just don't see a lot of reason to expect that it's going to change. And that can be okay. I mean, it's hard for Michigan State fans, I think, to adjust to it because it's such a core element of what the program has been. But as we've spent a lot of time talking about on this podcast, the profile of this team is just a little different.
Yeah.
You know, they're not doing the job on the offensive boards, but on the other hand, this has been a team that barring a game or two has done a very good job valuing the ball. They are a very good jump shooting team. They are not a team that has much in the way of post-up threats. Again, not always what you expect from MSU. You know, they're back to being a good defensive rebounding team. And tonight they were solid there. So that was important. That was good to see. You know, we're just, I guess we've just got to accept this. And here's the other thing too. How much is Tom Izzo complaining about it?
I haven't even heard him mention it, but I mean, I guess I don't watch all the.
He's not.
Yeah.
He's not. I'm not saying he's never mentioned it, but he's not banging the drum on this. So to me, I think that says he's kind of accepted. Yeah. Maybe his tune will change in the Big Ten when you figure that shooting percentages are going to decline because you're scouted better, you're playing better defenses. He may pound the drum on this a little bit more. I don't know. But I think it's tough to argue that he's wound up about it, because I'm not hearing him talk about it very much. So yeah, I think we just kind of have to come to accept that this is not going to be that kind of team. And so then what's important is that this group is doing what they've largely done to date this season, which is at least they're ending defensive possessions with one miss.
Right.
You know, because that's something they haven't done nearly as well over the last 3-4 years. Even when they were still rebounding well offensively, when Xavier Tillman was around, the defensive rebounding was not quite at the level you'd expect.
You know, I think when it comes to offensive efficiency, right, there are a couple of things that matter. How well you shoot, right? How often you score per time you shoot. How many shots you get up, which is dependent on how many times you don't get a shot up because you turn the ball over, or if you get extra shots because you get offensive rebounds. So, you know, all those combinations matter. You can't probably excel in all of them. If you do, you're like, you know, top offense in the country. So, you know, if teams rarely do.
If you're
not turning the ball over like they usually do, but your offensive rebounding is at a lower clip, it's probably a push. It's okay. And especially when you're still shooting well.
It sounds weird to say it, but, and I may have mentioned this here. I know I mentioned it on one of my recent appearances on Jack Ebling on his show. The profile is not normal Michigan State. In some ways, it looks more like a Wisconsin. And that's really weird.
How dare you say that?
I know. It's really weird to say, but that's, you know, it's not quite that extreme, because those Wisconsin teams are usually, you know, top 10 in turnover percentage. MSU, we're talking about top 40 or 50. But still, it looks closer to that than what we typically see from Michigan State. But you just touched on really what matters. And we try to emphasize this here. The key is the number of attempts you're getting to score. So there are different ways you do that. But the way that this MSU team is doing it, holding the mistakes to a minimum, not getting a ton of second chances, is fine. That's acceptable. What's not acceptable is if they were doing this kind of job in offensive rebounding and they were coupling that with 17 turnovers tonight. That would be a problem.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen that very much. One other point on that for tonight, for whatever it's worth, the one thing they did pretty well is they cashed in on the second chances they got. They only had 8 offensive rebounds, but they had 13 second chance points off those offensive rebounds. So that's better than a point and a half per second chance, which is pretty good.
And the one other thing you'd say, to be more specific about the, you know, free throw attempts, or not free throw, but field goal attempts, is you don't have to get a field goal attempt, right? Like if you get fouled, so it may not look like they have as many field goal attempts per possession, but that's because they're ending up at the line, which they don't count as, you know.
Yeah, you have to add, that's absolutely true. You have to add that in as well. It's really not so much field goal attempts, it's opportunities to score. Possessions that you had a chance to score either through a field goal attempt or getting to the free throw line, you know, either or. It's just, we tend to emphasize the field goal attempt component of that because historically, and particularly this season, Michigan State is not a team that gets to the line a ton. But tonight, that was different. You know, if they could continue anything, like I say, 2/3 of this, give me 20 free throw attempts a night the rest of the way, and I'd take it in a heartbeat.
And I guess the other thing we didn't really touch on, wasn't part of the key, but from just looking at the shooting now from three, this is as good a three-point shooting team as we had anticipated coming into the season.
Yep.
In fact, maybe even better. I mean, they shot 42% from three in both halves. I mean, 5 of 12 and then 3 of 7. They definitely slowed down and really looking for that shot in the second half, just because they were able to get inside and get to the rim. But you can definitely see the difference of bringing Malik Hall back, and Akins is definitely dialed in more. And I would, the one thing I'd say is Walker missed ones that he normally makes. I know that's the second game in a row we've said, but he was 0-for-4, and they were all good looks. I mean, he wasn't like forcing any of them.
Akins and Hall being back is a big boost. because now it's not, you know, primarily up to this point, it's been about Tyson and Joey Hauser with Pierre Brooks tossing in a little bit. You know, Hogard occasionally taking a couple attempts, but not a guy you're really relying on. With Hall and Akins out there, man, you got a lot of weapons. I was talking about that in conjunction with the idea of posting AJ up. And this is one of the things that makes Michigan State difficult to deal with if they could get him isolated on a smaller player on the blocks. Because if you don't bring help, he can overpower smaller defenders. If you do send help, you got a lot of shooters on that arc. And having Hall and Akins back is just lengthening the depth of that group, you know? Yeah. So that's a big, big deal. Yeah, it's a very good shooting, three-point shooting team. I mean, I haven't looked at the updated number, but they were just a tick under 38% as a team coming into this one. They're clearly over 38% now. So they're slightly better, I think, than they were last year, maybe ever so slightly. But this is a good three-point shooting team. There's no way around that. And they need to be. They need to be because they haven't been a particularly great team inside the arc. So it is really important that MSU get production from the three. They don't take an excessive amount of attempts. But, you know, this is kind of a normal game for them. I haven't looked at the average. I'm going to assume 19 attempts is probably around the ballpark of what they average, maybe a little under. But, you know, they need this kind of production. And I think it's certainly by this stage, it's reasonable to conclude that we know what they are as a shooting team. And it's not a surprise. They're very good.
Yeah, we have a number of players averaging over 40% or at 40. I mean, that's...
And Tyson Walker's not one of them, which...
No, I know.
We know how good a shooter he is. So, yeah, well, Hauser, Hall, Akins, all in that group. Is Pierre over 40? I think he probably is close.
Well, he's got to be, right? I mean, he's got to be over 40%.
So,
I guess he's only one for two today, but...
Yeah, but they got a lot of guys that you have to deal with. And that's going to make them a tough guy. And if you can marry that with what we saw tonight on a more consistent basis in terms of their perimeter guys looking to drive the ball more consistently, hey, that, you know, it opens up a lot on offense. You know, it's one hand washing the other, so to speak. It's one area impacting another offensively. So, you know, this is not a complete offensive team by any stretch. You would love to have that reliable post guy that Michigan State most of the time in the Izzo era has had. They haven't had it for a while. Really haven't had it since Nick Ward left, to be honest. You could argue that at different points of a season, you know, Aaron Henry gave them some of that. But they really haven't had that kind of guy in a while. So without that, that means you got to find ways to manufacture offense in different fashion. And if you can shoot the ball from deep, that's going to open some opportunities up to do exactly that.
Yeah. And Pierre Brooks, he is 41.2% this season from a three.
Okay.
14 to 34.
That's great.
I guess the other thing too, it definitely looked like a little bit more like Michigan State basketball today with 70% assist ratio on field goals, 21 of 30 head assists on. So the ball was moving well today. And that, you know, was obviously shown by Hogard having 10 assists.
Yeah. But you said Joey had six, right?
Yeah, so, Joey had six.
I mean, geez, Joey wasn't that far from a triple-double.
No.
So it was a lot of guys. We talked about Holloman, that great play in transition. You know, they did some nice stuff. It was good to see the ball moving. And, yeah, look, there are different ways to skin a cat. Assist to made field goals ratio is not necessarily – an ideal measure of great offense for every program, because there are different ways stylistically that teams approach it. But at Michigan State, it is, because that's the way they want to play. That's how their offense is designed. It's a ball movement, man movement offense. It's not a isolate somebody, square somebody up, try to take them to the rim. It's not that kind of thing. And so assists in the offensive Michigan State runs tend to be a pretty good indicator of how effective they're playing, how effectively they're moving the ball.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Again, Michigan State with 89-68 victory over Buffalo begins the 18 game remaining seat part of the Big Ten season with Nebraska.
Well, real quick too, on that front, now that the non-conference is over, that wraps it up. MSU finished with an 8-3 record in the non-conference, and
8-4 or 9-4, right?
No, they're 9-4 overall, but two of those games are against Big Ten opponents.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, 8-3 in the non-conference.
So
yeah.
8-3. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, Jack, going back to the last appearance I made with Jack Ebling, he asked me what grade I'd give Michigan State so far, and I landed on a solid B. And that's taking into account a variety of things, including the injuries they've gone through, obviously the schedule they were facing, not just the quality of the teams, but the way games played out, the travel, the lack of rest at times, all of those things. And I would still, you know, tonight was good. To beat this team by 21, that's what you wanted to see. And I thought the score was a fair reflection of the way the game went. I didn't think it flattered MSU. That's important. I think that you finish it the right way, but you look back at it now that it's over, and I would suggest that there aren't very many realistic Michigan State fans that looked at what they were facing in October and would have said, nah, 8-3 is not good enough. You know, I think, and if you told them that, one of the losses was going to come against Notre Dame, that would have been surprising, you know? Right. So I think they passed. That doesn't mean they're perfect. It doesn't mean there aren't a lot of things they need to continue to improve, but speaking for myself, and I think for you as well, I am encouraged by where they are. I think that the signs that you would want to see in terms of what their potential is, the areas that still remain for growth, and the chances that they'll meet them to one extent or another are all present. You know, now that they're fully back and healthy and you see what they look like with a Malik Hall playing well, there's no reason not to feel a good level of optimism. Now, it was interesting, you know, they flashed a graphic on the screen, getting back into Big Ten play. Not a lot of favors. They've got these two home games against Nebraska and Michigan to start over the next week. And then they're in Madison and they're in Champaign. And then they come home to face Purdue.
Yeah.
So it gets real. I mean, and look, the Nebraska just manhandled Iowa.
Crushed them. It was, it was okay.
And we've talked about them. Now, this is somewhat damning with faint praise, but I think it's pretty clear now this is the best team of the Fred Hoiberg era. So, you know, that's no bargain, even at home facing those guys. And then you got Michigan, a rivalry game. So this is, it gets real in a hurry. But all that said, I like the way this team looks. I like their potential. I like the way they look now. I like their potential to get better. And that's really all you can ask for at this stage, right? With this team.
I mean, well, and, you know, as we were just starting to feel really good about this team when we had the double injury there, you know, it changed our outlook and it changed everyone's outlook sort of what this team was going to be. And I think it was easy to forget that those guys were coming back and presuming they came back healthy and got back to full strength, that team would be the team that you saw before, although, you know, they're going to be better, obviously, but most teams are, you know, hopefully most teams are improving throughout the season. That's what you hope if you're a coach, I'm sure.
We talked about it at the time when that hit, that it really was just survival mode. And they did barely survived Oregon, barely survived Portland, but those were two big games to get in the win column. You don't survive Notre Dame. Finally, you get caught. And then you get beat by Northwestern in what was disappointing, but then you find a way and you get a road win against Penn State. So they survived it. And then the last three, Brown, Oakland, and this game tonight, have been about getting healthy, getting guys reacclimated, trying to see some individual improvement over this period. And they're through that now. And the rest of the way, it's, you know, quote unquote, normal. It's Big right. 10, 18 games packed into, what, 9 weeks, I guess? Something like that.
I was looking at recording schedule. Yeah, it's like, it's a lot. Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. But I, again, I think you have to feel, as a Michigan State fan, you have to feel not ecstatic. You're not puffing out your chest, but you should feel pretty good about where this team is and what they can be, what the ceiling is. Because we haven't seen the best of this team by a long stretch, not my opinion. We are going to see moments in the weeks ahead that are going to be beyond anything we've seen to date, which is how it should be. You know, the only question is, do you get that sustained for a long enough period that you can really think about doing some things, meaning, you know, contending in this conference? Because that's always the goal.
Yeah, I think the schedule doesn't do them any favors. I think the weaker teams in the conference, I think Michigan State only plays once, for most of them. I think Nebraska played twice, but you know, outside of Minnesota, there really aren't any easy free games in this conference this season. So,
yeah, you know, I would say to anybody who wants to talk about that, okay, tell me who the weaker teams are, because Nebraska would be everybody's choice probably at the moment for the 13th best team in the conference, right? Only Minnesota's worse. Nebraska just went and just smacked Iowa around, and they should have beaten Purdue.
Yeah.
They had Purdue. So are they the 13th best team? If they are, there aren't any easy games, you know? So I don't, the scheduling stuff, I guess I made my peace with that a long time ago. I've just figured that at the end of the day, you don't have control over it. And I've seen Michigan State teams win conference titles and be in position to go to Final Fours and all of that in years where supposedly they weren't getting a scheduling break. You know, it's in a 14. I used to care about it more when we had 11 teams.
Yeah.
Because it could really be like having a crucial single play vis-a-vis another contender could really seem like it would tip the scales. But once this thing got to 14 and newsflash, it's only getting worse with the LA schools coming in.
Yeah.
Let's just play the games and let's see what happens.
Yeah. Right. And those things work themselves out. And honestly, you could have all the conspiracy theories you want that it's set up for certain teams, which there's no way that's actually the case. But even if it were, how do you even know? I mean, especially this year, you wouldn't even know what teams you want to avoid. And
because here's the thing that people forget about, and it's especially relevant in a year where I think if there was ever a year that you could fairly say, well, there's parity, meaning there's a lot of teams that are a hair's breadth different from each other. I think that's a fair description of the Big Ten right now. So in that kind of scenario, yeah, it matters who you play and where you play them. But you know what else matters? When you play them. And we saw that with Northwestern. I felt like Michigan State just at that, if you played that game even a few days later, I'm going to assume it's a different outcome. You know, but they got them at the right time. And there are going to be moments like that. I'm going to guarantee you, for as much as people are convinced that, you know, Purdue's going to run away with this thing, mark my words, and I haven't even delved into their schedule yet, but I don't have to because I know how it works in this league. There's going to be a game or multiple games where Purdue is going to be playing. They're going to be running on fumes a little bit because of the schedule, and they're going to run into a team that's better rested than they are and just ready to go on a night where they're not, and they're going to get got because that's what happens in the Big Ten. I just don't see any reason to deviate from that. So knowing that that's a reality, it's kind of like this period where Hall and Akins were out. To me, I think the goal is survive it. just get through it and play these games as they come, and we'll tally it up at the end of the year and we'll see where we are.
And we'll assume just like that you, as you said, Indiana's your number one pick, but they're not going to win it all. So
yeah, I'm very confident in that. That much I'm confident in. They're not winning the Big Ten. And I don't think they're winning a share of the Big Ten, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll know more in about 8 games. We'll have a little better idea of where teams line up. All right. Well, again, we won't see you again until 2023. Everybody have a great New Year's.
Absolutely. Happy New Year, everybody. And you know what? New Year reminds me of this because, unfortunately, our football program is not participating in any of the festivities this year. But we didn't even mention Keon Coleman on the Michigan State bench. And Izzo mentioned today, right, he has officially been cleared by Mel Tucker to play. So I was kind of surprised they didn't get him in there tonight, but I'm assuming that's because they just felt like they haven't had enough games, maybe. I mean, MSU's got a deep bench now of walk-ons. I mean, in addition to him, they've got what? You've got Davis Smith, Steven Izzo, and Nick Sanders, right? So you got three.
Whitens is also technically a walk-on.
Whitens is four. And then, Coleman, you know,
will be five.
We're not a walk-on, but a guy you want to maybe try to get some of those minutes. So I don't know, but yeah. So a Keon Coleman sighting on the bench tonight, and he will be there the rest of the way. So happy New Year, those who obsess about Keon Coleman playing basketball.
And Malik Carr did not play for.
He's not going to play
this year. Yeah, he's not. And he's done. I think he's going to focus just on football and getting the NFL.
Yeah, and that's point. You know, that's a smart move. Personally, I'm a little, you know, most Michigan State fans have for the last 2 years, as I kind of not even half jokingly mentioned, have been obsessed with the idea of Keon Coleman playing basketball because there were all these high school highlights of him. You know, he's obviously a superior athlete, dunking on people and, you know, making very athletic plays. And I think that had people excited. And to his credit, I mean, Izzo clearly loves him. I heard him talking about him in a post-practice press conference earlier this week. He just loves him. And I had actually heard that last year from somebody I know who's very closely connected with the coaching staff, that they were really – they knew what kind of athlete he was, but they were really impressed just with his whole thing, his demeanor, the way he approaches it. So that's for real. But I am a little bit disappointed – with Malik Carr not playing. I agree. I'm sure it's the right decision, but man, I loved watching Malik Carr play basketball in high school. I really did. Cause he was a guy that kind of, he would have fit in with the bad boys. I mean, he had that kind of attitude to him, and he ran his mouth a little bit, not like Hunter Dickinson. He did it smartly. but I'm getting in my shots a week early, but I just loved, and he was a hell of a defender. He was a good rebounder. I really thought he might be a guy who'd have a chance to help them a little bit if they needed it, but that didn't happen last year, and it's probably not going to happen, period, at MSU. But as I say, for those who love the Keon Coleman news, celebrate.
And I guess with that, we'll, again, see you next year. And until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green. Thank you.